Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the man.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business's people and their love for trees. He's green. So don't make him angry. You wouldn't like him when he's angry. Here he is, Mike Novak. And they pay me for this, folks. Okay.
Now, I actually, we're still getting used to this, but we're getting better. That's the cool thing. I've actually had an idea of how this was supposed to go, and I was going to play a little bit here before we did this. So I'm going to move this over. No, wait, you got to stop this before you do that. Man, it's one step at a time, right, Mikey?
One step at a time.
One Mike step C. At now, what I time. Meant to play was this to get us going. Let's see what happens here.
Tickle in your nose, there's probably maggots in there.
A Southern California
man had 200 live maggots removed from his nasal cavity after a screwworm fly made one brief visit up his nostril.
Blah.
So at your next family picnic, be sure to wear protection.
Ew.
And now for the gardening report. It's time to plant your tomatoes and your summer corn. As always, you want to watch out for any dark clouds advancing fast on the horizon. It's probably a plague of locusts. In 1875, a swarm of Rocky Mountain locusts covered 200,000 square miles of farmland.
And the reason I play this...
Farmers tried to drive them out using poison, kerosene, and setting their fields on fire. One day...
is because we're going to be talking about bugs today a little bit.
...to be extinct. But you never know. And inside the house, the bug situation is not much better. If you have books, silverfish are probably devouring them now. And if you have walls, termites are eating those.
Of course. I heard Ron Coggill talking about termites yesterday.
I heard many a termite horror story. I have.
A woman tries to murder her husband.
All right, and then I'm just going to play at the end of this.
I'm not good with bugs either. They give me the creeps.
Small towns across Europe. After these messages.
Okay. And then... after that, I was going to say, I'm not sure this is going to work because it's coming off the computer, but after that, it was, well, that doesn't sound good.
No, that doesn't even sound right. It sounds like there's a bug in my headphones.
Yeah. Oh! Mikey, that didn't work.
That did not work.
The thing that was supposed to plug in and work okay didn't work. That was going to be, that was going to be,
that
was
going to be. At the Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road.
Well, you know, when I have a chance to get into a production studio and make a new show intro, I will, and then we'll be able to talk about where we are.
North Milwaukee Avenue.
That's right, we are. We've gone from Midway to O'Hare. Though that's a shame that that didn't work. I had my Mitt Romney saying in Spanish, "This is paid for by Mitt Romney."
Oh, nice.
That whole deal.
Nice.
So
in good Spanish or poor Spanish?
Really bad Spanish.
Yeah.
I think that's the only kind he knows. Now, you know, he probably... that was that whole thing that he did the other day where he... did you see the debate where he was accused of saying that Newt Gingrich called Spanish the ghetto language? And they said to Mitt at the debate, "Did you say that? It's in your commercial." He says, "Oh, well, I haven't heard that commercial." Even though his voice in Spanish is saying, I approve of this commercial.
Yeah, right. I approve of this
I approve of this commercial. So there you go. Welcome to the Mike Novak Show. Lots going on today. Lots and lots. As I said, we're going to be talking a little bit about bugs this morning, but in particular, some pests that you might have on your indoor house plants. Dr. Wally is going to be here. And we will be talking about that. Dr. Wally, of course, from Pesci's Garden Center in Des Plaines. And Rick DeMaio weather, of course, the relentlessly warm weather continues.
It's snowing out.
I know. It's nice. It's actually kind of it's pretty. It's like, wow, it's Sunday morning. It's snowing.
I wasn't happy to see it when I woke up.
Oh, come on. Just enough for your car to slide off the road.
Exactly.
Really good stuff.
And just enough to get your hands real cold while you scrape off the car and
you
brush it off.
You are such a weenie.
I am not
a
winter fan.
You are total weenie.
I can't stand it.
Don't you go
cold.
Up to Wisconsin and stuff? Come
in
on.
In the summer. like right now when it's like 20 there and there's like 5 feet of snow and the only way to get around is via snowmobile, count me out.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Yeah, I got family up in Edmonton, Canada, too, that keep trying to get me to come visit. And I'm like, yeah, in July.
That is winter at its finest,
nope.
baby.
Nope.
Okay.
Not a fan.
Rick is here, second half hour. And then in the 10 o'clock hour, I'm very happy to say that I got a couple of people are going to be talking about that new Illinois recycling law. State Representative Daniel Biss from the 17th District will be here because he was one of the sponsors. He was the guy who brought it up in the General Assembly in the House. And Mel Nickerson from the Environmental Law and Policy Center will be here as well. And the two of them will explain what you're supposed to be recycling if you haven't been doing it, because it's the law. Bomb, bomb, in Illinois. And
so what do families with blue carts that don't get picked up for weeks and weeks do?
We're talking about electronic recycling.
Oh.
That, you know, you got a blue cart, you're not throwing your electronics in there anyway.
Right.
So this is something different. So, but actually that's one of the questions I want to ask is, what's the enforcement? You're supposed to get a fine if you throw stuff up. I don't see the electronic electronic recycling police out there. And it makes me wonder about how that is going to be enforced. I really don't know. So they will be here. And then Brian Houck, who is the Lincoln Park Zoo Director of Horticulture, will be here. They're starting a series on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, February 1st. Smart and Soulful Gardening is the name of that seminar. And then it kicks off a month of seminars at the Lincoln Park Zoo. I will be talking. And he's a guy I've known about for a long time. I just have never gotten on the show, and we haven't connected. And so I'm glad that that's going to happen. So that's all on the big broadcast this morning. Before we get there, though, there's a ton of stuff happening in the horticultural world. Now, first of all, I have to put the word out for next week, because next week we are doing the very big, and it's, of course, it's on the show, it's always very big, the Decisions Chicago, the Great Herb Debate, for which I don't have a sounder yet, and it wouldn't matter because I wouldn't know how to load it into the system here. But we have folks who are going to debate herbs for Onesie Chicago. Now, of course, we've got the three candidates, chamomile, cilantro, and basil.
I'm team chamomile.
Are you team? I don't even get that. Don't
I
understand
like
what that's
tea.
About.
I think the flower's pretty and it smells really nice.
Blah, 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 blah. Okay. Well, then your person is Linda Tyson.
Go, Linda.
A.K.A. Garden Girl. That's her blog. And you can tweet her at SS Garden Girl. That's at SS Garden Girl. She is going to be representing Team Chamomile next week. So she'll be debating for, I guess, this. She'll be the surrogate for Team Chamomile in our debate. Team Cilantro is one of our regulars, Snappy J Dog, a.k.a. Jessica Rinks. And she's president of the Forest Park Community Garden. And she's going to be representing cilantro. Here's the weird thing. We don't have anybody for Team Basil. I can't believe that there's no...
Basil.
I can't believe that nobody wants to represent Team Basil. Now, I'm not going to do it. I'm sitting back. I haven't been bribed yet. I'm waiting to be bribed to throw my support.
You can make so many delicious things with basil.
To throw my support behind one of those... Well, I know. I love basil. And I may just step up and do it myself, but, you know, I'm trying to be...
Swiss chard, right?
What?
Swiss chard was our winner last year.
Of course.
I still haven't consumed anything revolving...
Because I haven't made a dish and brought it in for you. That's why. So next week, and the other thing I need to inform people of, I want your opinions of these various herbs. I'm willing to put them up on the Decision Chicago Battle of the Herbs page on the Mike Novak Show, well, on MikeNovak.net. I'd love to have your comments about the various herbs. So, in fact, there's one right now. Oh, well, Snappy J has already tweeted, woot, woot, go cilantro. Woo. Could you be a little more specific there, Jessica?
And you don't have to be in the Chicagoland area if you want to... Throw your hat in the ring.
Oh, no. And in fact, you know, unlike Seed Chicago, where they can only mail it out locally,
we've got people listening in Washington State right now, Mr. Sebastian Aguilar. How you doing? And if you have an herb that you like, you can always hit us up on the Mike Novak website or our Facebook page or Twitter or wherever you want.
So I want folks to tweet me, to write on the Mike Novak Show on Facebook, to email me, mike@mikenovak.net, and tell me why you like one of those three herbs, so we can post them on the page as we lead into Decision Chicago, the great herb debate, next week. So is going to happen a week from today, probably 10 o'clock hour. Now, the other thing we're going to do with that is at the same time, I'm going to have a true herb expert on the show. Not that the others aren't true herb experts, but this guy's been doing it professionally. His name is Sal Gilberti, and he's the co-author of Herb Gardening from the Ground Up, Everything You Need to Know About Growing Your Favorite Herbs. Now, he's out in the East Coast. He's a third-generation owner and proprietor of Gilberti's Herb Gardens. It was established in 1922 and is the largest herb grower and supplier in the United States. So, Sal, I'm enlisting to be kind of... a moderator and maybe referee for the debate. I still got to talk to him about it. I don't think he knows exactly what's going on. Of course, neither do I. But it will all happen next week. So I thought folks might want to get on board with that and start sending us their comments about their favorite seeds. So in anticipation of the big event next week. Now, something else before we get Wally on the phone here that's been going on. Some of you might have noticed I tweeted something. I did tweet it, but I also on Facebook yesterday. There's in the world of horticulture, there's a very interesting controversy happening right now. And that is... Many of you may be familiar with the National Wildlife Federation and their conservation efforts nationwide. And this past week, they decided that they were going to, well, take some money from Scotts Miracle-Gro. And it kind of set the conservation world on its ear. Because, Scotts is, they're the people that sell weed and feed and, you know, that stuff that I advise you never to use on your lawns. And they also sell Roundup, and there, a lot of folks are not particularly enamored of Miracle-Gro itself. And a number of the people who are National Wildlife Federation members feel betrayed, and it's you're not going to see it in the mainstream media. Not going to see it. Ain't going to be there. Don't go wasting your time looking for it in the Chicago Tribune or the Sun Times or on ABC News or or even MSNBC or Fox or any of those people, they don't care. Well, mainly because they take a lot of Scott's Miracle-Gro dollars. And that's part, you know, and it raises this larger issue of people who have a lot of money and can throw it around and whether they're ever called out, I guess that's too strong a word, but examined, I guess, is the right word. So on the internet, on Facebook, on Twitter, there's a hashtag, NWF. If you go there, there's lots of comments on there. Folks are talking about this. It's a big deal. So I talked to a woman who was on my show last year, Carol Sevilla Brown. And she was in town last year to at a seminar here, and I interviewed her. And she has blogged on this considerably in the past week. And I actually got on the phone and talked to her yesterday. And I didn't have time to do it today because to talk about it on the show today, except for this little mention, because I got lots of guests. In fact, let's get Wally lined up there. Okay, I guess Heather's already doing that. Cool. But I am going to talk about it in a couple of weeks. And it'll be interesting to see where this goes. And part of the thing you also got to know about, and you might not have been aware about, is, and one of the reasons some people are upset is Scott's got fined for $4.5 million for selling birdseed that was tainted with herbicides, or actually pesticides. Meaning insecticides. They were storing the seed, and it was bird seed, and to protect it so that it wouldn't get eaten while it was in storage, they put pesticides on it and then sold it, and there's some indication they knew they were doing it. At any rate, they got fined $4.5 million for that. And that's why some people are upset, because they think that for the National Wildlife Federation to take this money is a deal with the devil, frankly. So, and I just got a tweet. My analogy for the Scotts thing is like if the American Lung Association took money from big coal companies. Pretty good. Pretty good analogy. So, I'm going to talk about that in a couple of weeks because it's just too interesting. And I think almost mainly because if I don't do it, who does? Where are you going to hear this? You can go online. You won't hear it on broadcast. Won't hear it anywhere. So, you know, and as I told Carol yesterday when I was on the phone with her, because I don't give a rip. So there we go. Wally Schmidtke will be with us in just a heartbeat.
I got his voicemail.
What?
And he's not at home.
What? On both?
Mm-hmm. I left a message. So, you might, what's it, stretch?
Okay. That's okay.
I think you can figure it out.
I can do it. Yeah. I can go.
I'll get him for you. I will, but I got to trek him down first.
Wow, that's interesting.
Well, they might have had a fungi gnat infestation that he's got to deal with right now or something along those lines.
Well, but what I will tell folks, well, I'll let them know in a second, but that information is on my website. See? And it's a good thing that I do that. And I just got another tweet, a question to me. Any idea why no major enviro media has picked up this story? Oh, interesting. So you're saying like Environmental News Network doesn't have it? I haven't checked Environmental News Network or Mother Nature Network or Mother Earth Network. Any of those environment? It says... That's the question, is why no major enviro media has picked up the story. Is it because Scott's might be an advertiser? Don't know. I don't know the answer to that right now. But it is a good question, so maybe people have seen that and can write to me about it and let me know. And just something for you, Heather, which you'll appreciate. I just got a this is something that is going on the website for the Great Herb Debate. Lauren just wrote to me. Hi, I think cilantro tastes like soap.
Huh. I'm kind of with her on that. I'm not a huge fan.
This may be a genetic thing. One nephew is allergic, and a few others in the family also think it tastes like a chemical rather than food. Yeah, but, you know, I think anise tastes like medicine, so, you know, it's like licorice tastes to me like medicine.
Oh, I'm not a fan of licorice either.
Anyway, she writes, makes eating Thai and Mexican food difficult to say the least. Chamomile, is there anything you can do with it other than make tea?
Yeah, soap.
Basil has to be the winner, she says. So delicious in so many dishes. Also, Heather, we're having a warm winter here, so don't fear visiting Edmonton.
See, there I go. There
Edmonton!
We go. Mm-hmm.
What's the slogan? I know that Minot...
Oh, I don't know their slogan. I know their hockey team. It's the Oilers.
In Minot, North Dakota, it's Why Not Minot, but in Edmonton, I don't know. Yeah. Sure, it was minus 45 for a very short time, but we have very little snow.
Minus 45.
And the temperature
is... It's too cold.
The temperature is hovering around the freezing mark, which is almost tropical for winter here and in the Great White North.
Yeah. I start complaining when it hits 40.
You don't even need that to start complaining.
No, I work in radio. I've got plenty of things to complain about.
I know.
But, I don't like being cold, I have to admit. But what keeps me here in Chicago in this frozen tundra, you know, 4 months out of the year, is the summers and the springs and the autumns here. You can't beat them, especially with places like the Arboretum and the parks downtown and the Lurie Garden, and it's breathtaking. So that's what keeps me here.
Well, let's see if we can find Wally.
I'm gonna keep looking.
Okay. Just look under, you know, try looking where George Bush looked for weapons of mass destruction, under the table, under the couch.
Okay.
Just see if Wally is around there.
Well, here I should look in flower pots and
I would think that'd be a good idea. All right. I'm very excited to have a new sponsor on the Mike Novak Show. And the next time you walk or bike along any of the 62 miles of the Illinois Prairie Path in DuPage County, think about the fact that it was the nation's first rails-to-trails conversion back in 1963. And as you stroll along the Illinois and Michigan Canal, National Heritage Corridor on the banks of the waterway that helped make Chicago an iconic transportation hub in the 19th century, keep in mind that more than 40 National Heritage Corridors now exist, but the one in Illinois was the first. These are just two of the success stories of the remarkable organization called Openlands, which will celebrate its 50th anniversary next year. In those 50 years, Openlands has helped save, secure, and provide public access to more than 55,000 acres of land in northeastern Illinois and the surrounding region. If you can think of a way to preserve, advocate for, and celebrate our green spaces, Openlands has probably done it. I'm proud to say that I'm a fan of Openlands. And not just because now they're advertising on the show. If you've ever listened to my show, you know that I've talked about the organization many times in the past, and I'm glad they're with us. I want you to be a part of the Openlands community. Volunteer your time, donate to a project, or just enjoy one of the many Openlands public spaces. Openlands, conserving nature for life. All right.
Okay.
I'm trying to play this. Now, they told me this is play four. That's what we got. I got it turned on. It played before. Oh, I know. No, it's not. This is very confusing. We're figuring this out. Here we go.
Yeah. There it is.
At Innovative Insulation Solutions, their mission is to deliver the highest performing foam insulation systems available on today's market with an incredible R value of up to 7 per inch. Their history of safe and effective application of these systems, coupled with total dedication to quality, consistently earns their customers' trust and satisfaction. They specialize in all types of foam insulation. Spray-applied close-cell and open-cell polyurethane foam insulation, closed-wall cavity injection, and foam-in-place masonry block insulation. Innovative Insulation Solutions is totally committed to anticipating, solving, and supporting all of your foam insulation needs. Call Innovative Insulation Solutions today at 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com. That's 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com.
Have you ordered your seeds for the 2012 growing season yet? Don't panic. There's still plenty of time. But if you're a fan of heirloom seeds, and that's a good thing, you know, I want you to consider ordering from the D. Landreth Seed Company. Established in 1784, Landreth is the oldest seed house in America. Its founders introduced the zinnia, the white potato, and many tomatoes into the United States. Today, their collection features more than 60 different heirloom herbs, more than 70 different heirloom tomatoes, more than 15 different heirloom seed potatoes, and that's just for starters. For only $5. Yes, folks, I said $5. No, it's actually amazing that you can get this catalog for $5. The 2012 D. Landreth Seed Company catalog with more than 100 pages of seeds, roots, tubers, garden history, 19th and 20th century horticultural art, and 450 photographs. It's not just a catalog, it's a work of art. And it's a resource for those interested in heirloom vegetables, herbs, and flowers, and the history of American agriculture and horticulture. Get a catalog for yourself or a friend or both by logging onto LandrethSeeds.com. That's LandrethSeeds.com or call 800-654-2407. 800-654-2407. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784. Have we located the evil? Oh, I think the evil Dr. Wally has been tracked down. And
real quick, I want to mention something. We were just tweeted that one Seed Chicago participants makes beer with chamomile. And there you can make teas, infused oils, strong infusions, a sleep pillow, and compresses, amongst other things, on top of beer.
A sleep pillow. Where did you find this?
This is on whisperingearth.com.
Oh, you just went to look that up because you...
Sure I did. People are dogging my chamomile. I love it.
They should be dogging your chamomile.
They should not be. It's relaxing. And in this day and age, especially, you know, I'm a mother, I need to relax. I work in radio and I have kids.
And I don't know which is worse.
I don't either. I think I'd have to go with the radio because the kids tend to love you back a lot better.
Yeah. Right there. Radio has never loved anybody back.
Not really. No.
You're right. Have we got Wally here?
We've got Wally.
All right. We've got Wally. Let's go to line one and see if this works. Wally, you with me?
How are you doing, Mike?
All right. Good morning. Where were you?
I was waiting for your call, I guess.
Uh-oh. Heather?
It came. I got his voicemail twice. I think someone booked this guest kind of on the last minute.
I don't think so.
No?
I think we've had this going for a while, haven't we, Wally?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, kind of, yeah, because we got a whole page of stuff on the line here at MikeNovak.net. You go to this week's show, there's a headline that says, Rats, my house is full of gnats. you know, that's a really interesting problem. I think folks, they see stuff flying around their house in the winter and in the summer, and they don't know exactly what they have. Whether it's fruit flies, whether it's fungus gnats, whether it's drain flies. But a lot of it is fungus gnats. And how would they recognize a fungus gnat, Wally?
Well, a fungus gnat's going to look just a little bit bigger than a fruit fly, Mike.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, just a slightly bit bigger. You know, if you put it under a magnifying glass, it's actually almost two-thirds the size. Now you're... Your so-called sewer gnats or your sewer flies are going to have a wider wing. And one unique characteristic about them is if you touch them, they kind of burst into a powder. They disintegrate.
What? A drain fly or a...
Yes, a drain fly.
You know, I went to one website. One of the things I did add, you gave me a bunch of really cool websites that help you manage indoor pests, the houseplant pests, including a couple of sites from the University of Illinois and a couple from Colorado State. And then I thought, you know what? Folks need to identify these different flies. So I found a couple of good ones, one at University of California and one of University of Missouri, and I added those. And those are all at MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. And if you have a problem identifying, this will help. But one of the sites, and I don't remember which one, said that drain flies are actually kind of cute because they don't fly very well, and they have these huge wings that sort of like, they look, I'm not sure exactly what they look like, but they're kind of fuzzy, you know, and the fungus gnat almost looks like a mosquito.
In a sense, yeah, it's a real small one, yeah.
Yeah, a real small one, yeah. But one of the things you said you've discovered, and by the way, you know Dr. Wally, and we use the Dr. Wally in air quotes, the doctor part, not the Wally part, because Wally really is his name, but is the manager at Pesci's Garden Center in Des Plaines. One of the things you said to me a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about this is said you had a new idea for how to control fungus gnats in home. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, your fungus gnats, there is actually a bacteria that you can mix with water and pour into the soil to kill a larva. And it's this Bacillus aureus. I believe it's number 14. It is actually the exact same bacteria that's in your mosquito controls, like mosquito beater wafers or your mosquito granules that are in little packets that you would put into your bird bath or flip a wafer or two or a packet or two out in your backyard if your backyard is flooded and you're afraid of mosquito larvae building up. They naturally eliminate the larva of the mosquito, but they work well for fungus gnats also. So what I found is I'll take a little small packet of the mosquito granules and take about a half a packet and put it in a gallon of warm water into a milk jug and let it dissolve good for a day. Shake it a few times so it's thoroughly mixed, and then proceed to do a soil drench the first time when you use an application, and then later on just routinely water your plants for a couple of weeks with this mixture. It's absolutely harmless to us. It's harmless to pets and the environment, et cetera. It breaks down, but it does get into the soil and takes care of the larva quite effectively. And it's a lot less expensive than some of the commercial mixes that you have to email for that aren't readily available by retail.
That's kind of interesting because what you're saying here is that the thing you use for mosquitoes to control mosquito larvae, does it mean that the fungus gnat biology or physiology is close enough to that of a mosquito?
The larvae are close enough to the mosquito for that to be very effective on them as well.
Interesting.
You know, it's dual purposes. You don't have to just buy one product for one thing. And like I say, some of these concentrates that you'd have to buy online, you have to pay shipping, et cetera, are pretty expensive. And then you have an ounce or 2 ounces or 5 ounces of something that you're going to use probably once in a while, whereas your mosquito dunk products are real, real easy to use. And like I say, they're dual purpose. If you have mosquitoes out in the yard or bird baths, you're in question about the mosquito larvae this summer, well, it's a good thing.
Well, and the other thing, though, as you point out, is that if you have one of those dunks and you know, got some of in there, the little donuts that you buy mm-hmm. with the Bacillus thuringiensis israelis, if you don't want to use a whole dunk in the house.
Yeah, it only takes about a quarter of one.
So you chop up your donut and use a quarter of it, and then dunk the rest in your coffee, right?
Well,
no, I don't think so. If you don't want to go that route, obviously there are physical controls you can use, which is first of all you got to understand why fungus gnats are there. They got brought in. From something. And something you pointed out to me I thought was kind of interesting is that folks think they have a clean bag of soil, and they bring it in, and suddenly they got fungus gnats flying around. What happens there?
Well, some of your commercial soils, and I'm not mentioning names, they're proper, you know, very popular brand names that come loaded with a little chemical charge of fertilizer, too, or soil moisteners, do have a tendency to get fungus gnats in them. When you repot a plant, then all of a sudden, magically, fungus gnats appear, and you haven't had them for, you know, for months at a time, or had them at all, well, then you have to be a little suspicious at a planting medium that you're using, you know. Like, all of a sudden, they came out of that plant that I just repotted. You know, what's with this? I guess the bottom line is you pay for what you get with potting soils. That less expensive potting soil that sometimes is you feel is a great bargain with the resealable top and everything else sometimes isn't your best buy because you run up with problems.
Yeah, well, and that's a really good the point, the resealable top. And if other folks are like me and I got potting soil, I'm throwing it in the garage and it often sits there and I don't even reseal the top. It's sitting there. So it's an invitation for things like fungus gnats to get in there, isn't it?
Oh, sure. Sure. I'm guilty of that myself. A couple of winters ago, I had a bag of potting soil that I didn't have it into a sealed container like I usually do, like a Tupperware container or something. And I used it inside for my amaryllis, and boy, oh, boy, was I sorry about that. The fungus gnats were launching out, and then I thought I got rid of them. And then about a month later, you know, they're flying out there. They're in the bathroom flying around. And I actually spied one, you know, exiting the overflow of my bathtub. So what they did is they got down in those overflows and they laid their eggs. And a month later, the eggs hatched.
Yikes.
So what I had to do is spray some foaming bathroom cleaner and some bleach down into the overflow and then tape it up and seal it for a couple of days until it took care of the problem. But
you don't always have to use bleach, I think. I saw a site that says vinegar.
Vinegar will work.
And baking soda, and then you get this wonderful reaction.
Yeah, well, there's a real foaming chemical reaction.
Yeah.
Two of those.
That'll take care of, you know, one of the things I'm discovering is vinegar will clean anything.
It's a good cleaning product, and it's, you know, it's organically safe too.
Yeah, but the other organic, there's a couple of other organic treatments if you got fungus gnats, and one is the classic thing that folks do, and that's overwater their plants. Fungus gnats love, well, the larvae love wet soil, and in the winter it's hard for your plant to take up all the water you give it because it's slowed way down. Which is a reason some people never even fertilize their plants in the winter because it just doesn't have the energy to use that stuff. And you'll notice the soil doesn't evaporate particularly quickly, and which is a perfect breeding ground for fungus gnat larvae.
Exactly. What you want to do is slow down your watering and let the top one-third of the container dry out some, not to the point where the plant droops or whatever, but let it dry out some. You know, if it's a really bad problem, a lot of times you may need to repot your plant. But then again, too, when you're in the repotting process, you don't want to remove the soil from the root ball because that may damage and injure the plant in the long run. So you still have to be very careful of leaving some soil on there. Unfortunately, your fungus gnat larva will become entwined in the roots. So my recommendation is to repot them and then sprinkle some diatomaceous earth on the, well, of course, rewater real good, make sure the plant's hydrated. And then after the plant dries down a little bit, sprinkle some diatomaceous earth on the surface of the soil, dust it fairly liberally, and then seal the top of the container down with Saran wrap.
Now, that's the point I'm not sure about. Why do you do that? Because the diatomaceous earth, if you don't know, is microscopic shells, and it's going to slice and dice those fungus gnats as they try to crawl out of there. Why would you need the Saran wrap on top of that?
Well, what you're doing is you're giving them the double whammy. The larvae that come up to the top and crawl through the diatomaceous earth, they'll get cut up. But then any larvae that happens to hatch into a fungus gnat, which is able to fly, all it's going to do is it's going to go through the coating of diatomaceous earth, bounce off the Saran wrap and stay in that little trap, that little moat of diatomaceous earth dusted on top of the soil. It has no escape.
So it's kind of like the Truman Show for fungus gnats, where it comes out and there's a big bubble that they're living in. Hey, I made it! Oh, wait a second, I didn't make it. Oh, no.
Yeah, it's like they can't escape. All they'll do is end up landing back in the soil, get more dusted up, and then that's it for them. It's fatal.
They check in, but they don't check out.
Check out.
All right. Well, Wally, this is great information. I want everybody to know that it's up on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to the homepage. If you just go to the homepage about a third of the way down, it just says how to knock a fungus gnat flat. Just click on that link, and it'll take you right to the page. And right below that, I'm glad you sent me that. I already knew about this, Wally, but the USDA has a new plant hardiness zone map out. In fact, I'm going to talk to Rick DeMaio about that in just a second. And it tells us that in Chicago and most of the suburbs now, we're in zone 6A. Do you believe that?
Yes, I can, because in certain areas where if you look at the map, it's kind of like an influence by the lake. And there's like a little bit of, how would you say it, it's its own microclimate over that way. And the trick with that map is if people first look at the zone hardy map, they need to actually click on their zip code and
right.
click on Illinois to get the close-up detail to show that little section of Chicago being highlighted there.
Does it go in that close?
It'll show it, yeah. Just click it in, and like I say, you got to click it to get a closer detail, and you'll see that little microclimate.
Yeah.
But the trick is, too, Mike, if you really want to be sure of your plant's hardiness and everything, microclimates are one thing, but the way the weather changes, and I'm sure Rick DeMaio will agree with that, you're probably better off just going by the Zone 5 thing for plants, you know, by Zone 5 advisement. You're probably a lot safer that way.
Well, it's telling me that Zone 6A is now minus 10 to minus 5 Fahrenheit. That's the as cold as it gets. That's not the heat zone, right. But that's the cold. Well, they say hardiness, but it means how cold it'll get.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, listen, Wally, always a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks, Mike.
Keep in touch. Thanks for doing the stuff. If you've got problems with indoor pest plants, not only fungus gnats, but white flies and scale and mealy bugs, go to the site on my page. Go to where we tell you how to knock a fungus gnat flat, and you'll have other resources that you can look up, and I'm sure they'll come in handy. And, Wally, we will talk to you soon.
Okay, Mike, thank you.
All right, take care, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Heather.
He said goodbye to you, Heather. Well, she's waving. Bye, Wally! It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. Rick DeMaio weather coming up. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Choosing a tree for your property is part art and part science. City trees have to tolerate some tough conditions, including wintertime road salt spray and runoff. Roots have a hard time penetrating Chicago-area soil, which is typically clayey with rocks and rubble mixed in. Some of it dates back to the Great Chicago Fire. Chicago soil also tends to be alkaline, which means it has a high pH, making it hard for some trees to extract the essential nutrients they need, like pin oak. And red maple trees, if they're not doing that well, they look yellow. Maybe that's why. Meanwhile, asphalt streets and parking lots soak up heat, creating urban heat islands that put additional stress on trees in summer. And, of course, in the winter, trees must be able to withstand extreme cold, except this year, of course. The Care of Trees can help you make the right decisions about choosing a tree. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at where you want to site a tree. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
Pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
It's time to get to our favorite meteorologist, Rick DeMaio. How you doing, Rick?
Good, good. I enjoyed that segment with Wally. It reminded me of the drain flies I once had in my house.
And how did you get rid of them?
Oh, God. Who was the friend of yours, the bug guy?
Oh, right. Rick Moskovitz.
Yeah,
A-plus pest control.
Yeah, he came over and dumped some stuff in there. And next thing I know, within basically about, I don't know, maybe 24 hours, they were gone.
You know, that's another good tip. Rick's a good guy, and
Rick uses cedar oil.
Right.
Well,
right.
I'm not sure it's for he uses it for some things, okay?
Right. I forget exactly what it was, Heather, but it was a combination of something that had kind of an oily base to it, without a doubt.
Uh-huh. And he has just and he's oh wait, that I'm Oklahoma. No, that's not okay. Now I got to find his business, cuz I was looking at, I wanted to give the right URL for that, and he yeah, he's got some great stuff that is really non-toxic, and
you can
use, and it's just great. And I'm glad that he was able to I remember that you were working with him on that.
I couldn't imagine where these flies were coming from. I had everything sealed up. I was putting little catch things here, and next day I know I'm like, these are weird looking flies. They had like they looked kind of drunk. They didn't fly very well. They had like kind of fuzzy wings, and I was like, well, where are you guys coming from? And they just kind of like looked up at me and said, we don't know, we came out of that drain and now we're here in your house, so give us something to eat, you know. And it was a pain because I just didn't know where they were coming from, and next thing you know, he came over and they were gone within a day. So,
and that website is www.apluspest.com. And he's got some great stuff, and non-toxic, environmentally safe, green pest control.
It was non-toxic. You could drink this if you want. I'm like, you can drink this if you want.
He does what he's got. One of these things where when he was on the show, he's like rubbing it on his face and going, "Yeah, see, it's a skin softener too." Okay.
Yeah,
that's what you want to do, Rick. That's fine. Yeah. Go knock yourself out.
Sniffing that stuff too much, you know?
What do you think? The new USDA hardiness zone map. Are you aware of that coming out?
You know what? I'm not, but I heard you mention it. And, that site that Wally was talking about, I think I had sent that to you a while ago, where you can actually get right into the microclimates of the area. You know, as you know, I live right on the lake, and I'm definitely in a microclimate.
Right.
Particularly if you have a non-Western exposure, you can easily have houseplants, you know, in your pots on your balcony probably up until the first week of December, depending on the type of winter, and this has certainly been one of them. But I think you were alluding, Mike, to that article that I sent you relating to the what they call the 2011 Arctic Report Card about how the Arctic environment has gone through some fundamental shifts. And, you know, they've looked at satellite data from back in the 60s to the early 2000s. And it's amazing how much more of the Arctic is now green and growing. And obviously the shift isn't just occurring here, but it's occurring globally.
Yeah, if you look at maps, people talk about global warming or climate change, and you look at the maps over the years. If you're looking at the equator, you're not going to see a lot of change. But if you look at the polar areas, that's where the change really has occurred.
I think it's time that we get rid of the term global warming. I think we need to talk about.
I know you hate it.
Well, here's the reason why. I think we need to talk about the fact that, and Wally also touched on this, is that the climate has become more variable, which has caused us to have less cold weather for a longer period of time, and probably spikes in warm weather and higher rates of evaporation, which in the end has caused us to have overall longer periods of rising temperatures as opposed to these massive, you know, periods of warming conditions. Because I just think the term, it shoeboxes us. It puts us into the corner. It paints us into a corner. But the fact that we've had so much variability in climate, in the end, what we end up having less of, it seems to be, is less periods of Arctic air. And this is certainly one of those winters where you see we just have this, you know, very, very strong jet stream moving in off the Pacific. Our winter has been anything but a normal Chicago winter. And a lot of people say, well, is it global warming? I say, no, let's not try to make it seem that way, because as soon as we do, and the first day it's snowing, people go, well, you said it was going to be global warming.
Yeah, but that's their problem, not yours,
well,
really, you know?
It is our problem, because we're the ones who are talking about it. So you can't tell people one thing and then they believe it, and then all of a sudden they come back and they say, yeah, but you told me this. I think we need to fundamentally strip down and change how we talk about how climate has become altered over the last 50 to 100 years, and talk about the consequences. And one of the consequences is that we have less periods of cold weather in the wintertime, which then equates to overall higher temperatures for the long term. Now, if you look back at this past summer, while we didn't have a very hot, humid summer in Chicago, when we did get hot, we did get humid. And where it was warm, it was incredibly dry in parts of the desert Southwest and in Texas. And I was talking to someone from Atlanta not too long ago, a friend of mine who's a meteorologist, and he says, oh, yeah, this has been great. We've been having about 2 or 3 inches of rain because Lake Lanier is still 10 inches below normal, and it's great that they're getting rain down across Texas, blah, 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 because if they don't get anything now, by the time we get to the growing season, you know, they're screwed. And I'm thinking to myself, it's interesting how they're thinking about the upcoming growing season and the summer in Texas, and here I'm thinking about less snow in Chicago. So you kind of think about what you're used to getting and what you're not used to getting, and here we're used to getting, you know, snow and cold in the wintertime, and they're worried about already, you know, how their summer is going to work out, because, you know, in parts of Texas and parts of the South, they had incredibly dry weather. And that becomes more of an issue. We don't really think about growing stuff around here in the wintertime. But so far, in parts of Texas and parts of the South, they've had sufficient amounts of rain, and therefore they are having a little bit better feeling about going into the growing season, which, you know, starts up down there in about 2 months.
Yeah, it gets there so quickly, and I can understand why they're happy to get the rain. But, you know, you're talking about Chicago and its moisture. I heard a statistic, I think, just yesterday that said that normally we have like 28 inches of snow by now, and now we're around 17. That doesn't sound significantly different to me.
We're about half of where we could be for this time of the year, but that's compared to normal. And normal snowfall is around 37 inches, but we've been anything but normal. Last 4 years, we've had, you know, very, very high amounts of snow, and between 50 and 60 inches. But what was amazing to me, Mike, last week, and I think I talked about it on your show, that we'd have a chance of showers and thunderstorms. And I remember your statement was like, your response was like, really, when? I'm like, tonight. And I think the first thing out of your mind was like, no, we don't get thunderstorms in Chicago in January. But this has happened so often here in the last 5 to 10 years. We had Arctic cold on Thursday. We had 8 inches of snow on Friday. Saturday was kind of the null day, and then we warmed up and fogged in and melted so much of that snow. And then we had thunder and lightning Sunday night, and you know what? 90% of the snow was gone by Monday morning.
Yeah.
That never used to happen around here.
Yeah.
And it just shows you the variability. And I mean, we keep getting these snows and melt-offs. So it just tends to show you that we're still in this high rate of the variability. Things don't happen the way they used to. We just had, you know, another warm year globally. It was the 11th warmest and the 35th consecutive annual temperature above average when you compare it to the last 130 years. And the pattern really over the next 10 to 20 days doesn't look like it's going to bring us back towards normal anytime soon.
So this it's the same old that we've been having this winter, and which is making a lot of people happy, but does it make you nervous?
Well, you know, it kind of makes me nervous, and yeah, I mean, I know I only have like two more minutes here, but I think it's interesting the fact that, you know, we'll get the snow, we'll get the cold, and people will say, okay, is that it? Is there anything more coming? It's like they want more of it, but clearly I don't think anybody wants what we had last Friday. But the bottom
I do. I'm the guy who does. I like that stuff. I think that was fun. What's the point of winter if you're not going to have snow, okay?
Yeah, I know.
You might as well move to California.
I mean, I enjoyed it. I went out cross-country skiing right away.
There you go.
And on Saturday, and I loved it. And today, yeah, we got about a half inch of snow, but you certainly can't ski in it. So bottom line, the forecast is like this. We're done with the snow for today. We'll actually get another batch through here tonight and tomorrow. But by this time tomorrow afternoon, I shouldn't say by this time, but by tomorrow afternoon, we could be approaching, you know, 40 degrees. It looks like upper 40s during the day on Tuesday, maybe mid-40s on Wednesday, and then it cools down for Thursday and Friday. The overall long-term pattern looks to be near to slightly below normal temperature-wise, but nothing in the way of any big snows around here anytime soon. And, you know, next week we're talking about the first week of February already.
I know. And once we get to that point, that means that the chance of an Arctic outbreak gets less and less.
Yeah, usually when you get to about the 15th of February, the chances of one become pretty slim. I've seen some really cold weather in here between about the 10th and the 15th and the 20th. But once you get past that 15th, your chances of a long-duration Arctic period are basically done. However, I'm still thinking that the last 2 weeks of February are going to be very snowy. We can easily approach normal snowfall by the end of the year with a very snowy second half of February.
Go snow. Go snow. Go snow.
Maybe we'll kill the drain flies as well.
Yeah, yeah. And Heather does not agree with the go snow thing at all. So.
Yeah, I think, well, and I heard she doesn't like 40 degrees. Yeah, it's hard to agree with snow, right?
At any rate, Rick, thank you so much. I'm sorry that we're going to continue to be warm.
It's slightly above average.
Slightly above average. Mel Nickerson from the Environmental Law and Policy Center is listening and nodding and shaking his head, and we'll talk about that in 10 o'clock hour. Always pleasure having you on. RickDeMioWeather.com or go to MikeNovak.net on the homepage. You'll see Rick's smiling face. Click on that, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, and go Giants.
Whatever. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye. We'll talk more about that next week. Mel Nickerson, as I said, from the ELPC will be here. We're going to be talking about electronics recycling in Illinois. Stick around.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business's people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Searching the land for a hero of a man. You say I need more than my fair share of attention, but I think you know that just isn't so. Underneath, I felt the fire of a burning question tearing me apart.
Welcome to the second big hour of the Mike Novak Show, and I'm pleased to have in the studio with me Mel Nickerson from the Environmental Law and Policy Center. Let's make sure I've got I think I've got the right mic. Talk to me, Mel.
Good morning, Mike. Nice to be with you.
There you are. I'm trying to remember if you've been on my show before. I think you might have been on the phone. Have you been in person? Did you come down to the old...
No, this is my first time.
This is the first time?
And okay. Quite a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you. Mel and I have worked on some issues together over the years, environmental issues, not here necessarily at the station, but in my other... when I wear my hat as a Chicago Recycling Coalition president. And that's what we're talking about this morning, some recycling issues, and I say some because I don't want to just talk about the new law that's gone into effect, but we will start there. And it was January 1st, and I was thinking about that because there was a fair amount of media coverage about it on January 1st, but it occurred to me that there were probably people who were clueless about it, And that even if they saw that information that was put out there, they didn't have any idea how that related to them. And so that's what I wanted to talk about this morning and say, okay, what's this law that you guys passed in Illinois? And when I say you guys, I know that you were instrumental in getting this through. You helped write the law, I understand.
I did, indeed. I drafted the law. I was a lead advocate, a negotiator in order to pass the legislation.
So who did you bribe to get into the big room? That's what I want to know.
Well, you know,
how does
like
that
to...
happen? I mean, you having lunch with the governor now? Is that what's going on?
Well, you know, I know of the governor, great guy. And
I know of him, too. I've heard of him, you know?
No, let's just say I'm not bashful. I'm willing to kick the door open, and I'm passionate about environmental issues. And this is a great one because it's an economic development tool. It is a free residential recycling program, and I stress the word free. And it is great for the environment. So it is a triple win. I hate to be a tad cliche, but that's really what it is.
Well, let us bring in one of the people that you talked to in the process, and that is Representative Daniel Bliss from the 17th District of Illinois. Good morning, Representative Bliss.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. Wonderful to have you on board here, and I thank you so much for being on the program this morning. I will start by asking you a question that relates to the 2000. We had a 2008 law in Illinois that was a recycling law, and I can remember the big rollout. I was at the Hazardous Waste Disposal Center at Goose Island, and they said, okay, we're going to get manufacturers on board with this, and we're going to be recycling stuff. And then I read an article the other day as I'm researching for this show that said that as we went into 2012, Illinois was one of the lowest ranked states in the high, maybe this second worst next to Texas in terms of recycling e-waste. Why didn't that first law work?
Well, there were a couple issues with it, and I should stress that I actually was not at the time in the legislature, and so I think Mel will be able to fill us in on some of the more detailed backs and forths that took place in the course of the negotiation. But the law had a couple features that we wanted to change. First of all, it was fairly narrow in the scope of electronic products that counted. The bill that we passed this past spring expanded the list of categories of electronics that were covered by the law from 4 to 17, incorporating mice and fax machines and video game consoles and all kinds of stuff like that. Second of all, and frankly more importantly even, that law that was passed in 2008 had embedded in it a mandate on manufacturers, but it was constructed in kind of a weird way. It said that your mandate for next year is calculated by taking what your performance was in the first half of this year and multiplying it by two. If you think about the incentive that places on the manufacturer, it puts them in a situation where if they have to accomplish, say, 1 million pounds of recycling this year, let's say they choose to do 100,000 pounds in the first half of the year, 900,000 pounds in the second half of the year, well, then their mandate for next year is going to be just 200,000 pounds. So by backloading their performance into the second half of the year, they could actually see that responsibility that they were obligated to perform in the following year decrease. And that's what was happening in the first couple of years of the program. We were seeing a decreasing mandate as most other states' mandates were increasing.
How did that? I'll ask Mel this because he's right here and he was part of that first law. How did that happen?
Well, the very simple answer is because it was a result of compromise. Anytime you pass legislation, I don't care whether it's at the city council or the state level or the federal level, that requires a degree of compromise. And so in order to get several factions on board, we had to go with a with the model that Representative Bliss has previously described.
And you mentioned that we're now up to 17 items that are covered in the e-cycling program in Illinois, which puts us near the top of the list in America, doesn't it?
We are. To my knowledge at this time, only New York State and Illinois have this broad spectrum of electronic items that must be recycled as a responsibility of those that manufacture these items.
And the list, and I'm going to read the whole list, just so you know, because not only are manufacturers responsible, and I want to get to the how we separate the manufacturer's responsibility from the consumer's responsibility here, because that's the part that I think is a little murky at the moment. But what's covered is televisions, monitors, printers, computers, including laptop, notebook, netbook, and tablet, electronic keyboards, fax machines, video cassette recorders, portable digital music players, digital video disc players, video game consoles, small-scale servers, scanners, electronic mice, digital converter box, cable receivers, satellite receivers, and digital video disc recorders. That's quite a list.
Indeed.
And quite a mouthful. All right. Now, but let's get back to Representative Biss. And what I would ask you is, how do the manufacturers fulfill their end of the bargain? What are they required to do? They manufacture these things, so do they have to take some of them back? Do they have to take a certain quota back? How does that work?
Yeah, so the way it works is they get a quota, which is a function of their sales from a couple years previous. So, for instance, in 2012, they would have to they'd be responsible for recycling by mass, I believe, 40% of all the electronics that they sold in the state in 2010. And then they would just be responsible for going out and doing it. Most frequently, what that would wind up meaning in practice is there exists a variety of electronic recycling centers. Many of them are either run by local units of government or else they're small businesses typically. And the manufacturer would have to go out and enter into contracts with a variety of those, usually paying them some amount per pound, and so as to fulfill their responsibility to meet that quota.
Okay, and so they can do this with a municipal organization or they can do it with a private? Does it make any difference?
It does not. I mean, there's a few special instances in the bill where they get extra credit for particular types of organizations, for instance, in counties that have particular that are particularly underserved in terms of having recycling centers, or also businesses that hire the developmentally disabled. So there's a few little exceptions carved in, but essentially it doesn't really matter where they go so long as they're getting the recycling done.
It's interesting because, as luck would have it, I was scanning the internets yesterday and came up with a story from the Kane County Chronicle about a company out there, St. Charles Scrap, and how they're very excited about this law because they stand to benefit. And their whole deal is to get people to drop stuff off at their company and get paid for doing that. And I guess that brings into the consumer end of things, because according to the stories I've seen, individuals could be fined for throwing out electronics in the trash. I looked for it online in the EPA. I see no mention of it. Why? Mel, you're laughing, so why don't you start with that question?
Well, you know, this is a frequently asked question, and the simple answer is yes. We need a stick and we need a carrot. That seems to work well in terms of human nature. So the carrot is it's free. The stick is that if you throw something away, one of those 17 items previously mentioned, the EPA has the ability, Illinois EPA has the ability to fine you $25 for the first offense. And that's specifically for a resident. I believe the fine is $100 if you are a non-residential consumer. But the bottom line is, and this is what's making me smile, Illinois, the Illinois EPA is doesn't have the personnel to go out and snoop around a homeowner's garbage.
Exactly.
Right. So there are no trash police. And I think that really ties in nicely with I think where you're going, Mike, is, you know, what is the responsibility of the consumer? And the responsibility of the consumer is to certainly enjoy the almost boundless ability to use our electronic items, the Blackberries, the computers, the fax machines, so on and so forth. But those items contain a host of toxic chemicals, materials. They include lead, mercury, beryllium, cadmium, all of which should not be discarded into a landfill where they can sit and leach into groundwater, affecting our environment and our public health. But on the flip side, there's also a host of very valuable materials, the plastics, the copper, the gold, the circuit chips. All of these items, and glass as well, all of these items can be reused. And so it's a wonderful opportunity for small businesses across the state of Illinois, backbone of our economy, to take these items, salvage what is salvageable, and to turn it back into the marketplace as raw materials for reuse.
By the way, if you want to comment on or if you have a question about the new recycling law, we got the experts. In the studio, one is in the studio and one is on the phone, Representative Dan Biss from the 17th District and Mel Nickerson from the Environmental Law and Policy Center. 773-763-8278 is our phone number, 773-763-8278 if you have a question about this. As you mentioned, Mel, there really aren't EPA e-waste police out there. And it makes me wonder whether folks aren't just going to ignore this. One of those things I saw in the story I read is that there are scrappers out there who might be able to profit from this. So if you're throwing your 24-inch old-time TVs out in the back, maybe they can take it someplace and get some money for that. Is that going to happen?
Well, that is a possibility. But what will more likely happen is that your waste hauler, the folks that pick up your trash, if they see a flat-screen television, a large old cathode ray tube television sitting next to your garbage bin, they're simply not going to pick it up.
So it's going to sit there, and somebody's going to notice at some point. And I encourage all neighbors to rat on you.
Right.
I don't know. But I guess that's my problem. And Representative Biss, I guess I would go back to you and say, do you think there's enough teeth in the legislation, not only, A, to get consumers to do the right thing, and I would do it simply because I don't want that junk in our landfills pouring into our water supply, and you would hope that everybody does it, but not everybody thinks like that. And knowing that the EPA doesn't have the staff to handle this, do you see the companies that are responsible, the manufacturers, setting up incentives that will encourage consumers to return their e-waste?
The short answer is yes, I do. And the longer answer is that this is exactly why it was important to pass this bill. Remember, before we passed this bill this spring, we already had going into effect January 1st, 2012, a landfill ban. The problem is that landfill ban is never going to work unless you have a companion piece of legislation to make sure that the manufacturers are creating opportunities for residential consumers to recycle. And what this bill does is it puts in place a mandate on the manufacturer side with teeth, right? Because the manufacturer has their, remember, their goal is a function of their sales in previous years. That's very easy to calculate because when they submit their sales tax paperwork to the Illinois Department of Revenue, all that information is already in the hands of the state government. It makes the mandate easy to calculate, and it makes the enforcement quite easy, and the manufacturers will have no choice but to create those opportunities by working with local governments and other recycling companies to meet their mandate. Otherwise, they'll be subject to a somewhat more substantial fine, and again, that fine is not going to require a complicated garbage police walking through your back alley. That's going to be a very simple thing to administer.
Well,
so I think what the bottom line is, you can't rely on people to just on their own do research, figure out what the right thing to do is, and then go and do it if it's difficult. But if the opportunities are created by virtue of what this law does, and it's necessary for the manufacturers to get that done, I think you're going to see people finding it more and more simple, commonplace, and habitual to engage in this kind of recycling.
So that is the ultimate goal, then. It's to change our way of life and get us down that road, and you have to start someplace. I know there are a lot of people like me who welcome this opportunity to keep stuff out of the landfill. Either of you, is there any indication that a month into the mission that it's had an impact at all?
Yes, indeed. We are continue to monitor the progress of the implementation of the law. We are very excited about how things are unfolding. I know, for example, in Will County, a recycler and local government have partnered up to offer free residential pickup. But again, I think the theme that you're really focusing on, and it's a good theme, Mike, is that people have to be aware of what the options are. So one of the things that is very critical is that any electronic retailer, and there's a broad spectrum across our state, is required by this legislation to provide the consumer with information about the program. Now, one of the things that I will say with some chagrin is that when we examined the law back in 2010, the fall of 2010, retailers, by and large, were not bearing their proper burden, which was to inform the consumer. And we gave them the opportunity, wide latitude, as to how that could be done, whether you post a sign at the exit, whether you post information in your electronic products section of the store. So the Illinois EPA has the authority to fine those retailers for failing to comply with the law. In fact, one of the provisions that I think is wonderful to add extra teeth to this is that now any local government that has a host agreement with the Illinois EPA for enforcement actions can now also essentially write a citation to a retailer for failing, again, to comply with the simple task of informing the consumer about the recycling program and where they can find options for good recycling.
Oh, that's great. You know, you're right, though, Mel, that when I look at a law like this, you know, yes, I want the big businesses to step up, but I'm always thinking of the consumer. I'm always thinking from their end. It's great if it comes from the bottom up, that everybody gets involved and they do the right thing. By the same token, Senator DeBiss, I don't want to let manufacturers off the hook, because these are the people that are making this stuff. So I assume that that accountability was something that you really had in mind when you drew up this legislation. And by the way, we should give credit also to State Senator Susan Garrett, who was part of the 2008 law and who continued to follow this. And you, the two of you, worked together in putting this or getting this passed in the General Assembly.
Yeah, that's right. Senator Garrett is someone who's worked on this issue for a very long time. She was the chief sponsor of the bill, and I carried it in the House, and she did a huge amount of work and really was a great mentor for me in my first session, and deserves, I think, the lion's share of the credit for this. But yeah, you're exactly right, Mike. The point of how this bill is supposed to be constructed is that it tries to share the burden on all parties, right? It places a mandate on manufacturers, it places a landfill ban that is applicable to residential consumers. It obligates, as Mel said, retailers to provide information. I don't think there's any way to get this kind of fundamental behavioral change that we need accomplished without spreading the responsibilities and, or as Mel would say, the carrots and the sticks across all the different actors in the play. I also think, Mike, that your point about educating consumers and putting ourselves in a position to change basic behaviors is a key one as well. You know, maybe one of the lessons we should draw from this is that we should encourage, for instance, local school districts to have their schools function as e-waste recycling pickup zones so as to essentially partner with sustainability curriculum.
See, now that's a great idea. Yeah, when you start dragging the schools into this, as various issues have, such as local food, teaching kids how to farm, how to grow their own vegetables. I love that. And that's the other thing, that kids know about recycling. You know, as you may have heard, Representative Biss, and I'm not sure you were this, I'm president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition, so my life has been one of futility for the last X number of years. Folks come to Chicago and they say, why can't you guys recycle? And, you know, we have that managed competition going on, and I've got my own opinions about that. But here we are raising kids who come out of the schools and they go to their parents and say, why aren't we recycling? So that whole thing's beginning to change. And now when they're going to their parents with their cell phones and their laptops and their games and saying, hey, you got to put this in the recycling, that's where it's going to change, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think you're absolutely right that there is a gradual generational shift happening, and we need to leverage that as quickly as possible. I did a really fun program with Glenbrook South High School in my district. We did what we called a write a bill contest, and we went in with a single class and spent the semester working with the students to have them divide up into groups, and each group wrote a piece of model legislation they wanted to suggest that I take to Springfield to file. Of the five groups, three of them had some form of environmental legislation. You know, one of them was in renewable energy, one of them was in recycling. I think as we're trying to find a constituency to really build strong public support behind, broadly speaking, environmental and sustainable legislative agendas, and certainly particularly recycling, the younger generation is absolutely the easiest place to start.
Absolutely. And I found this in so many ways. When I was doing the community garden in my neighborhood, it was the kids. Kids dragged their parents into it. And the older folks got involved because the kids said, hey, this is going on down the block. And that certainly applies to recycling. All right, before I let you go, Representative Biss, I want to sandbag you here a little bit. It's not too bad, really. It's something that came up, and it's related to recycling. And you might not have an answer because you probably haven't been researching this. It might be more Mel's territory. Several weeks ago, I got an email from a listener who was talking about battery recycling, and that is household batteries, the alkaline batteries and rechargeable batteries. And she said that the Chicago libraries were not going to be collecting them anymore. And sure enough, I went to the site of she sent me a link to and I'm going to find it here because I want to read this, but she sent me to the City of Chicago site, and it is, where is it here? Here it is. And the City of Chicago site says, as of January 1st, 2012, Chicago's battery recycling program has been discontinued, including collections at Chicago public libraries. Rechargeable batteries can still be recycled at multiple locations throughout Chicago, such as household chemicals and computer recycling facility. Find additional locations at call2recycle.org. And then this is the kicker, this paragraph. The Illinois Environmental Protection Agency recommends disposing of alkaline batteries with regular household trash. Alkaline batteries contain no hazardous waste and little recyclable materials. Previous environmental hazards associated with alkaline batteries were due to their mercury content. The Federal Battery Management Act of 1996 phased out the use of mercury in alkaline batteries, and today few, if any, alkaline batteries contain mercury. End of story. That's all that's there. So I started calling around, and I called the IEPA and said, hey, what's this all about? And I said, where's your policy on it? Do you have a link you can send me? And they said, no, we don't have a link. There's no official policy on it. So what's happening here is the opposite of what you guys are trying to do with the e-waste law, which is they're now saying, and kind of through the back door, which really annoys me, that, why don't you just throw those in the trash and they'll end up in the landfill. And they're not talking about rechargeable batteries. They want those to be recycled properly. But the City of Chicago is now not giving you an option to take them to the library anymore. They're saying, oh, do it yourself. So now we're back to square one, which is the thing we just talked about for 20 minutes, how to get away from that, which is to make things easier. And yes, I do understand that there's not a lot of Recyclable materials and alkaline batteries, they're not particularly toxic, but to me it's a step backward. And the question I would ask is, how many tons of those batteries do we make in the United States each year, or use in the United States each year, and how much of that is ending up in landfill, and why are we endorsing a policy that allows us to go backward? That's a mouthful, and I know it's a bit of a soapbox. So I'll let Mel start, Representative Biss, and to give you a chance to think about that.
Wow, my seat just got hot.
Yeah.
What did Mel do to deserve this?
I don't know. He walked into a hornet's nest here. That's what he did. He said, here's the problem. I get hit with these questions, and then I start to look them up, and then either I get satisfied or I'm not satisfied, or it puts a bee in my bonnet. In this case, it put a bee in my bonnet. And I got to tell you, the EPA guys I talked to, and I'm not going to name names, the EPA guys I talked to said, it's not a, in the scheme of things, it ain't worth it. Well, I don't agree. I just disagree with that, Mel.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Anytime you have any type of material, I don't care whether it's paper or plastic or glass, there needs to be a process whereby those materials are recaptured and put back to use. It's as simple as that. The economics around recycling are staggering. Little is it known in this state, but comprehensively, recycling is a billion dollar industry in the state of Illinois. It is a huge economic development tool. And myself personally, I have a son who's 7 years old, and he is constantly asking me, Dad, when are we going to recycle? And I'm not fortunate enough to live in one of the wards that has the city's blue cart program, which is to be applauded. I hear it's a wild success in the wards that do have it. But I will say, as a native Chicagoan, my challenge is to the mayor and his administration to look. We need to have a citywide recycling program. The numbers around it citywide could be something like $5 to $10 per household a month to be able to empower us to recycle citywide. And again, I think the real message behind this—
And you're not talking about just batteries. You're talking about— Yeah.
Well, and I want to make a very clear point about that. Thanks, Mike, because the issue is recycling works when the recycler has a wide variety of commodities to take in and process. But given the markets, sometimes glass is a commodity that is more expensive. And other times, other items like paper are not. But when the recycler has a wide waste stream to bring in and process, then they can, essentially allow the glass or the batteries, which may not have a lot of resale market value. Those are free riders, but you're able to capture wonderful things like plastics and glass and aluminum. And that's really important.
Representative Biss, do you want to comment?
Sure. I'm glad that Mel jumped in first as the Chicagoan on the call. I live in Evanston, and I represent entirely north suburban Cook County. And the controlling agency for solid waste disposal for Northern Cook County is the Solid Waste Agency of Northern Cook County, the harmoniously acronymed SWANC. And I'm proud to say that they still engage in recycling of not only rechargeable but also non-rechargeable batteries, and they have pickup at almost every village and city hall in their service area. So I am entirely in agreement that both with your general point, Mike, that it just seems like taking things, even if they have only a comparatively modest toxic content, still taking things off the list of what is to be recycled appears to be a step backward. But I also think Mel's point is really important, that the whole thing works both as a business model but also as a behavioral pattern for consumers if we're broadening the list of things which can be recycled. And as every time we step away from that, we make the entire operation of recycling more complex and weird and difficult for the consumer and less economically feasible for the recycler. So I think it's a step backward, and I'm pleased that the Solid Waste Agency of Northern Cook County seems to agree.
Well, and I guess the point is we should make it statewide, perhaps Oh, boy, and the Republicans' heads will explode if I said we need a national mandate for recycling these kinds of things. More government intervention. Perhaps we do. And before I let you go, I got several tweets here that I think you might find interesting. One was Wisconsin has a great e-waste law written by Wisconsin State Senator Mark Miller, worth looking at. Mel, you're nodding about that.
Yeah, actually, I was a policy consultant in crafting that legislation and offered some strategic advice. So our law to the tweeter is similar to Wisconsin, albeit more robust, certainly in the scope of products.
Second tweet, the Kid Brigade is so important. Kids stopped littering in the country in the 60s. They shamed their parents into compliance, although you couldn't prove that in my neighborhood. But her point is well taken. This is something we need to do. Another tweet, I'm listening to you using my Kindle Fire and a radio app. We can reduce e-waste by consolidating our electronic devices. Well, there's something to be said for that. That's Mr. Brown Thumb. Hey, Mr. Brown Thumb, how you doing? So there you go. There's various comments on that. Well, congratulations to both of you on the new law. Let's hope it does change our culture and we move forward. And, you know, my feeling is we can't reduce the number of opportunities to recycle. We have to expand them, and that's what the law is doing. That's why I kind of railed a bit about the batteries, because it's two steps forward, one step backward. But at least it's two steps forward at this point. Representative Daniel Biss, 17th District, up in the north of Chicago, northern Cook County. Thank you so much for being with me on the program today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for the invitation. It was a lot of fun, Mike.
And congratulations on the new law, and I hope we talk again soon.
I look forward to it. Thank
right.
you.
Bye-bye. And Mel Nickerson from ELPC, thanks.
My
I'm glad
pleasure,
we finally got you in the studio here.
Nice to be here.
We'll do it again, definitely, because I know you cover a lot of policies. Give me 30 seconds on the latest thing you're working on.
Well, we want to talk about two steps forward, one giant step, or three steps backward.
Uh-oh.
Right now, I'm fully engaged on defending or trying to stop legislation that would make it easier to burn municipal waste as a form of energy.
Oh, yeah, that one. That's raising its ugly head again, isn't it?
Yes, indeed.
Why? We've been fighting that battle for 30 years here in Illinois.
Yes, there are new, and forgive me for being a tad inflammatory, but there are new...
Is that a pun? Sorry. All right.
Right. Thank you. Thank you.
Sure.
A tad inflammatory, but there are new snake oil peddlers, and they talk about these new technologies of being able to process municipal waste without any oxygen, to be able to ignite it without any oxygen.
Is this a plasma thing?
Part of it is plasma gasification.
Yeah.
There are different types. We've heard of microwave gasification. We've heard of a term called pyrolysis, which basically grinds up plastic and paper, turns it into these little pellets like paper mache. Some folks call it refuse-derived fuel, biomass, which is a tad absurd. But the bottom line is, anytime you take municipal waste entangled with just a whole host of toxic materials and you incinerate it at a coal plant or on site, you're going to be releasing a ton of toxins, in particular dioxins and furans. Those are insidious. They are like mercury. They do not biodegrade. They bioaccumulate up the food chain. They have been linked to cancer. And what's more insidious about dioxin, unlike mercury, it mimics hormones, how hormones communicate in the body. That's what it does. So, you know, I cannot say enough about the terrible ills of this type of waste incineration, when the real gem in all this is that if we are doing more recycling, you're creating many more jobs, and you're returning our natural resources back into the hands of those that can reuse these materials, as opposed to just burn it up and create more pollution. So I want to thank Governor Pat Quinn for vetoing the legislation this summer when he had an opportunity to do so on his desk. I want to thank Representative Elaine Nekritz for being a staunch opponent, and also Senator I'm forgetting her name. I apologize. But bottom line is we need to keep an eye on this. We need to fight the good fight and say no to waste incineration.
It sounds like something we're going to need to continue to talk about then. So I like the idea of snake oil. Yeah. Good. That's a good phrase. Yeah, the snake oil. Great. Well, we will. It's always a pleasure to have you here, and you keep me posted. Keep me posted on things, and we will talk some more.
Look forward to it, Mike.
Thanks,
you.
Mel. Now, if you've listened to my show recently, you know that I've been sounding the alarm about a proposed open-pit sand mine adjacent to the eastern entrance of Starved Rock State Park. Yet another thing to be concerned about. I'm happy to say that my new sponsor, Openlands, is also working to save this ecologically and culturally significant park. Go to openlands.org to read their action alert about this important environmental issue. There you'll find the contact information for Governor Pat Quinn, Lieutenant Governor Sheila Simon, and Illinois Department of Natural Resources Director Mark Miller, as well as information to help you craft a personal message. Did you know that the sand mine would have harmful ecological and hydrological impacts, that it would destroy a recognized wetland, and that it would pose harm to the federally endangered Indiana bat? Openlands knows that we all share the responsibility to protect our open spaces and natural resources for generations to come. Get more information at openlands.org and write to Governor Quinn today. So that someday you can tell your children and grandchildren, I helped save Starved Rock.
At Innovative Insulation Solutions, their mission is to deliver the highest performing foam insulation systems available on today's market with an incredible R value of up to 7 per inch. Their history of safe and effective application of these systems, coupled with total dedication to quality, consistently earns their customers' trust and satisfaction. They specialize in all types of foam insulation. Spray-applied close-cell and open-cell polyurethane foam insulation, closed-wall cavity injection, and foam-in-place masonry block insulation. Innovative Insulation Solutions is totally committed to anticipating, solving, and supporting all of your foam insulation needs. Call Innovative Insulation Solutions today at 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com. That's 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com.
We have had a Brian Hauk sighting. Yeah, in fact, he's actually in the studio, and he will be with us in just a second. Do you have your January? And it's about gardening. So we're doing. You're going to get a 180 here. You might get whiplash. We've gone from environmentalism back to gardening. Do you have your January-February issue of Chicagoland Gardening magazine yet? We're already heading into February, and you want to have the annual planning issue where you get set up for a whole year's worth of gardening. It comes with a three-hole punch along the spine. Mine's already in a three-ring binder, which helps me look a lot more organized than I really am. There's a story on how to keep your Boston fern looking lush and happy, even though it might be pining for the Red Sox. Actually, it might be rooting for the Patriots, too. Our very own Beth Botts tells you what kind of landscaping will help you sell your home and what kind will send potential buyers down the block. She even tells you how to stage your outdoor rooms to add maximum impact to the look of your yard. Of course, there's my column on the inside back page. No matter how much I stage it, people keep asking whether there's something better in the back room. Get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine right now when it can do the most good. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or, you know, I'm looking here. Okay, never mind. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
I taped it.
Yeah, we're changing the world here. We're creating a little. We're creating an environmental and a gardening revolution right here every Sunday from 9 to 11 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk. It's the Mike Novak Show. You can catch us on Facebook, on Twitter. We had lots of tweets today. Always happy to have folks out there listening on their iPads or whatever apps they have. You can listen to us on the podcast, which gets up later in the day. You know, if you can't do it in person, and I appreciate all, everybody who writes in, and I'm looking at a tweet here. It says Arkansas, California, Minnesota, Rhode Island are states that call alkaline batteries hazardous waste. Is that still true? Well, see, depends who you talk to. But we're not going backward; we're going forward. Brian Houck is in the studio. He's the Lincoln Park Zoo Director of Horticulture. Brian, this has been too long in coming.
Hi, Mike. Good to be here today.
I'm glad you are. I've known about you for a long time, mainly because you send me these emails every couple of weeks. It says,
yeah,
the horticulturists are getting together to have some brewskis. Come out and join us.
We do. We get together and have a lot of fun.
Yeah. How many people are in that group?
It varies. We might have a dozen. We might have two dozen. Sometimes we've had more. But we need our downtime to get together and socialize and share our issues.
And it was Terry Reardon who got me involved in that.
Yes.
Love Terry. Where's she working right now?
She's at she works for the conservatories. I think she's housed at Lincoln right now. You know, she's their seed propagator.
And at Lincoln Park Conservatory?
Lincoln Park Conservatory. But
really? Cool.
Well, but that's because Garfield has had some other damage. I'm sure she'll be
moving. Well, yeah, I know.
Back.
She was in the back rooms basically when the hail came crashing in. I mean, she wasn't right there at that time, but
correct.
She was working there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but it's good to know that, you know, maybe it was a blessing in disguise that they got a lot of money to pour in and put some new glass in there.
That's the way it goes in the gardening world. Every disaster is an opportunity. You get to reinvent yourself. They've had a chance to pick some of the glass out of the soil in that fern room at Garfield. And, you know, that creates new change, and that's good.
Yeah. And you work at the Lincoln Park Zoo. And if people think about the Lincoln Park Zoo, they're probably not thinking about gardening.
Well, we would like people to think about the gardens at Lincoln Park Zoo. We have a marriage between animals and plants. It's all
don't say that. Because some people are going to think we're trying to legalize that, marriage between animals and plants.
Well, they work in harmony.
Don't go down that road.
It's all about nature. You never know
who's listening to the show.
We get to tell the story about plants and animals. It's a good thing.
It is a good thing. I see you've got a series of gardening seminars coming up. It starts this Wednesday, February 1st.
Correct. Our first class is Smart and Soulful Gardenings. We've had to open a second class. We expect that to fill up, too. So I'd encourage people to sign up right away.
Right. What they did is from 6 to 7 p.m. this Wednesday. And where at the zoo is this?
In the Keller Auditorium. So
okay. Because sometimes I give PR people fits because I went to the site and I couldn't find out where the – and I might have been that I just missed it, but it's not readily –
Okay, well, here's what you need
to
know.
I could be wrong.
Here's what you need to know. So if you go into the zoo's parking lot and you go by the east gate, that's our main entrance with the arch, there's a building right there called Keller Auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
And in that door, that's where the class will be.
Okay. And what is this Smart and Soulful Gardening? What does that mean?
Well, it's a class I put together with the education department at the zoo, and it's a broad look at gardening. It's a participatory style class where we ask people to come prepared with a few questions. There's a pre-class activity, and then we discuss. We break into small groups, and we find out what people are thinking about, what are their issues. And then we bring them together back in a larger group, and we put them in context in terms of what we all do. So it's a class that I believe people will get a lot out of because the information is what they're bringing to it.
So what you did is they had this originally scheduled from 6 to 7, and then it got filled up very quickly.
Yes.
So you added a second session from 7:30 to 8:30 on the same night. So then you tell the people, nobody gets to sit through it twice, get out of here, and then bring in a new crowd of people.
That'll be the logistics,
yes. Well, that's kind of cool. I'm glad that I've seen actually a lot of publicity about this. People are very interested in about it.
Well, I think people have a right to be excited about this. I think it's a different style class. there's so much technical information with gardening, sometimes it's hard to get a broad overview. And it's
that's my job. It's like I'm not into facts, okay? I'm not into facts at all. I'm into just, you know, I paint with the broad brush and say, oh, gosh, gardening is fun. And people say, well, what's this disease on my plant? I go, really don't know, but gardening is still fun.
Well, yeah, you have to promote that enthusiasm. You have to get people excited and willing to try things and, you know, get out there and do stuff.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's terrific. I mean, there's so much technical information out there, it's hard to sift through. You know, but you have to start.
I'm so glad you say that. I'm really glad to hear you say that, because I've been doing this now on the air for almost 15 years.
Okay.
I have interviewed a lot of people.
Sure.
And a lot of really smart people. And I'm still surprised by how segmented they are, that the people in one area might not know what's going on in another area.
Yeah.
And so that when I'm asked to play garden guru as a radio guy, and I keep telling people my background is showbiz, okay? That's my background.
Sure.
I'm the guy who's supposed to know everything, and yet all these experts who are really smart and know stuff in their own areas, often you take them into a slightly different area, and they just look at you with the deer in the headlights look, you know?
Right.
So the point you're making, that there's a lot to know, but it shouldn't scare you from going out and trying.
Absolutely not. You have to have your enthusiasm. You know, gardeners have to accept a certain amount of failure with their efforts, and you just pick yourself up and start over again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why we came with the title of the course. It's Smart and Soulful Gardening. You're always trying, and you're using your enthusiasm and your ability to learn to do something a little bit better for the next year.
So the first seminar is to to set them up.
Correct. Well, and then
lead them down the primrose path, so to speak.
Well, in each class, what we're going to do is we're going to come up with a list of topics and the context in terms of gardening for the year. And then the follow-up in terms of what we can give back to them is that I'll be using those things as a springboard for my blogging at the zoo. So then if people check in, you know, they actually get to see the topics again. So the class will actually carry forward into the year.
Now, do you have a blog now, or is this something you're setting up?
Well, I use the Nature Boardwalk blog on the zoo's website. It's lpzoo.org.
Okay.
And I have done some blogging, but one of our biologists on staff, Vicki Hunt, has done quite a bit of blogging about Nature Boardwalk.
Uh-huh.
And those are really terrific little slices of what's going on there.
Uh-huh. All right. And I should mention also that this week, the Wednesday class is it's free.
Correct.
Now, you've got other classes then. You've got one on February 18th, and the rest of them are on Saturday. This one's on a Wednesday. The rest are on Saturday. And then you've got February 18th, which is Starting Seeds.
Correct.
And then May 5th, Herb Window Boxes. And speaking of herbs, I got to put in another plug here. I'm still looking for a champion for basil. Can you believe that I can't find anybody who's willing to speak for basil on this show?
I will speak for basil.
if we need you, I will call you next week.
I will speak for basil. Mrs. Burns' Famous Lemon Basil is my absolute favorite. Basil is a classic. You can't go wrong.
That's what I'm thinking, you know. But we have the chamomile. We're having the great herb debate next week as part of One Seed Chicago.
I won't dog chamomile. I won't dog cilantro.
I want you to throw mud. Oh, no, we got to dog all the... No, 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 let's not keep it above... down and dirty. That's the way we got to do
it. Basil is a trooper. Basil just leads them
all. Think Gingrich, okay, as you're doing the debate, okay? Think nasty. All right. I may have to do that. Well, hang on a second, because I'm going to talk to you about... then Saturday, May 12th, wildlife-friendly gardening. So it sounds like, you know, these four, even just the four seminars you have, and then you follow them with the blog, should be enough to inspire just about any gardener.
I would hope so. And I think the wildlife-friendly gardening is something we can do really well at the zoo, because we have that animal-plant interaction.
Yeah, but you don't let them out of there. You know, it's a different thing, you know. Come on. It's like you had your dog and you caged him in the backyard. And don't go near. No, I'm kidding. All right. That is Brian Hauke, who's the Lincoln Park Zoo Director of Horticulture. We'll be back with him in just a second. If you're a gardener, this is the time of year that you want a seed or flower catalog in your hand as you map out the coming growing season. And if it's a great and special heirloom plants that you want, look no further than the D. Landreth Seed Company. At 227 years old, they have not only been observers of our country's great history, they have made history with their introduction to America of some of our most beloved flowers and vegetables. Now, it doesn't matter what kind of gardener you are, there's something for you. Landreth has specialized collections for gardeners with limited space, gardeners wishing to celebrate their African American heritage, and gardeners wishing to introduce children to the fine art and craft of gardening. That's just part of the more than 900 heirloom seed varieties, roots, onions, shallots, garlic sets, tubers, heirloom flower bulbs, and more. I got to tell you something. I was online on Facebook this morning. If you're on Facebook right now, I want you to go to Landreth Seeds. And I'm typing it. Okay, there's Landreth Seeds. And I guess, did they? Oh, come on. See, this is, I got to log in for mine because this is, don't do this to me. All right, let's try this again. I think it was, there was a wonderful, no, let's go to the other screen. See, this is what happens when I try to do this because I was looking this morning and I was really, there we go. If you go to Landreth Seed Company, and that's the name of the site. It's just a wonderful post, and I assume it's by Barb Malera, about fixing chicken and what she was doing. And it's just a delight to read. And now I'm looking for it, and I can't find it, but it's there. And she just posts some great stuff, and it's a wonderful company. And you can log on to LandrethSeeds.com, find them on Facebook, or call 800-654-2407, 800-654-2407, D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784, and tell them that Mike sent you.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from The Care of Trees. Did you know that The Care of Trees has a blog? You can find the link to it on their homepage, thecareoftrees.com. Look at the right side of the page and choose a subject that you want to read about. Among the topics that the experts at The Care of Trees have discussed are tree scale insects and how to look out for them. Whose tree is this anyway? Tree myth busters. Why do people plant trees? What are tree ordinances and does your community have them? Historic and famous trees. One sensitive tree, one stressed tree owner. I bet that one's interesting. Prune trees in winter? ? Absolutely. And holiday gifts made from trees, nature, and green materials. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, check out the blog on the Care of Trees site or invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Old black magic has me in its spell.
Old black magic that you weave so well.
And that's what gardening is, after all, isn't it, Brian Hoff? How do you like the way I just segue everything?
Yeah, that was great. That was well put.
It is. It just sucks you in, and then there you go. So, as Director of Horticulture at the Lincoln Park Zoo, are you responsible for indoor plants, outdoor plants, a little bit of both?
Yes, both.
Indoor, I mean, do you have to research the animals' living situations and try to put appropriate plants, or is that even possible?
We do as much of that as we can, and we really put a lot of effort out in terms of getting the right plants that might represent a habitat as much as possible for an animal. Mm-hmm. And then we also do things in the landscape that we call browse plants, things that we can harvest and give to our animals, which is nice to be able to grow them on site. And so we do research in terms of what's appropriate and try to make sure we have as much fresh stuff as we can.
Mm-hmm. Because I have a friend, Christine Nye, who you probably know at the Shed Aquarium.
Sure, of course.
You know, and so she's dealing with indoor and outdoor, too. And you can't always find the perfect plant, but you got to be, you know, do what you can.
Right. Well, it's difficult to mimic plants in Africa when we
yes,
are...
Yes, I know. And that's part of the point. Yeah.
Right. I mean, perhaps a hawthorn in the middle of winter kind of looks like an acacia tree, but it's a little bit of a stretch. But you do what you can.
yeah, whatever you can. Well, if you're interested in learning about gardening. Now, are you teaching all these courses or you got other folks?
I am teaching almost all of these courses, although I will have some help with a few, like the Wildlife Friendly Gardening. We'll bring in multiple instructors. And then we also have a Prairie Plants class coming up July 11th, 18th, and 25th, and we'll have another instructor for that.
And they start this Wednesday, Smart and Soulful Gardening. Sign up, go to my website, and you can click on it. And Brian Houck will be there to teach you how to be a wonderful gardener.
This is the goal. I mean, we're an urban garden, and so we have set up this series, you know, to talk to the folks who, you know, might be gardening from a patio or a porch or a smaller garden.
Well, thank you for being on the show. We got to do it again sometime. I need to say goodbye, and I say go green or go home.